During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we continue on this Friday edition of The Zone. We will talk with Allie Trost Martin coming up an hour from now, get her thoughts on sporting, the current, and Lionel Messi heading to Miami and the MLS. We'll talk with her about all of those things and maybe even more, because typically the Allie Trost Martin conversations can evolve, depending on which way you look at it, into different forms. So we'll do that coming up at noon. Right now, hanging out with Matt Derrick, Chiefs Digest, joining us here in the Zone on this Friday. Matt, what's up, sir? How are you?
I am well, and you know that things always devolve when I'm here.
That's which is perfectly fine.
Sometimes they de-evolve when I'm here.
Yes, that's true. And I love that you got the beard starting. You couldn't play for the Yankees, but you know, it's starting to look good.
It's really powerful.
Are you just not wanting to shave, or are you letting it grow in?
Well, after I had my surgery, I didn't shave, you know, because I was, you know, having surgery and everything. And so, just don't care about your appearance for about a week.
Yeah.
And then I just kept it going because of it. I was like, hey, I've got nowhere to go or anything to do. So, and Josh was cheering me on,
That's so much kinder than bullying, which is what I felt like.
Well, there was some bullying involved in trying to get me to grow it out. And then it got really hot and itchy
I can't get past the itchy stage.
That went away. And then, a few days ago, it was just like, I'm too lazy to shave. And
yeah.
These aren't mandatory. These are organized activities.
We'll see how long this goes. It might.
Is this phase three of your beard?
This is phase
one?
I think
this
training camp.
This is phase two.
Training camp, if you've got to, you know, really streamline everything, I think that would be... reasonable.
Training camp is going to be way too long and way too hot.
I was going to say, there's no way you're going to be able to do that. It's not like when Drake has his beard, you know, the winter beard. Mm-hmm. Major League Baseball season is over. He doesn't shave until pitchers and catchers report.
It's a great philosophy.
Having the beard during the summer would be the exact opposite of the logic.
I don't see how you could have a beard in St. Joe in July and August.
Yeah, Josh?
I don't know. I'm not sure where I'm going to be in terms of my facial follicles when St. Joe's on the table.
You still seem like you have wedding hair. I mean, that is some...
Yeah, I'm thinking about doing something drastic. I've about had it with just sort of all of the, you know, being this beautiful, this long, this often is a real weight on the psyche.
Even your forehead, has a shine to it.
Wait a minute. Are you with child? I'm glowing.
You are glowing. You know, a couple of weeks abroad, just wandering around in the Spanish streets.
Should have sent you to Europe, too.
Bring the color out a little bit, yeah.
Well, good for you, man.
Which we actually traded great. Me and Messi, so...
I mean, you do look a little bronze, but I thought maybe it was a bronzer you were applying.
It's actually just in honor of the third Mahomes.
Damn it, I was going to go there. It's actually... He's just been hanging out with baby Mahomes.
With baby here Patrick. Just to put layups for you guys. You know, just behind-the-back passes that you guys are just stuffing home.
Well, I appreciate it. I mean, it's... You know what? You actually pass the ball. You know, typically, I'm not doing that on the court or off the court or anywhere else. But last time we talked, last Friday, I was unaware because I don't pay much attention to Bears. But on Sunday, in Sunday Sound Off,
I was so happy to see this.
Finding out that it is Fat Bear Week, Fat Bear Season Month.
Really season.
Okay.
Yeah, Fat Bear Week is in October.
Okay, so Fat Bear Season opened up?
It's starting, yes.
When is it starting? Has it already started, or is it going to start? What are we looking at? Are they waking from their slumber right now?
They had kind of a soft launch Thursday night, because that was the first kind of, you know, introductory chat online. And I don't know if they've set the date for the cams to go up. Usually it's like mid-June. So the cameras in Katmai National Park go up. And because right now the bears that live in Katmai National Park, and there's like, you know, 1,000-some-odd bears, they start coming out of hibernation. They go down to Brooks Falls and the Naknek River, I think it is, that goes through there and goes in like the Bay of Alaska and where into the Pacific Ocean, and all the salmon and everything come through. Well, the bears come down and they just eat a ton of salmon. And you get to watch them on the cams and everything. And it's just nature at its finest.
Do you have a rooting interest on who you're got the Santa. Take that, punk.
Everybody's got their favorite bears. I mean, Otis is like a universally favorite bear because he's an old guy. You know, he's getting up there. So every year it's like, hey, when's Otis showing up? Because you hate to be the year that Otis doesn't out of hibernation. But you got some great storylines.
Very long hibernation for Otis.
Talk about the other night, Grazer, Bear 128, she's legendary because she's the fiercest. I mean, all the bears have numbers because the researchers have tagged them with numbers and everything.
Yeah, so it's like a sports team.
You have to be spotted on the. You have to be spotted by them like for three straight years, I think it is, before they give you a number. And so, yeah, Grazer's 128. But then some get nicknames. You know, she's Grazer. I don't remember why she's Grazer, but. I think it had something to do with something that like got grazed on her head or something. I can't remember what it was.
I just thought maybe she was grazing on grass.
Bear 747, who was one of the biggest bears.
I was
going to
say 747. Is that after an airplane or something?
Bear Force One.
That's my favorite nickname anywhere in Fat Bear season.
Yeah,
Bear Force One is my favorite thing in the world.
And he's the defending Fat Bear champion. So, you know, last year I think he was like maybe 1,600 pounds.
Oh, you win by how big you get?
So, yeah, well, you get nominated for Fat Bear Week and for the bracket. There's a bracket.
I'm looking at the bracket right now for last year.
And so, you know, you get nominated for the bracket, and that's just choosing, like, who got the fattest during the year, you know? Otis a couple of years ago won, and it wasn't that he was the biggest, fattest bear, but what happened was that he didn't show up until like July 28th or something. And then he was just like emaciated. I mean, he was just like the skinniest looking bear. It looked like the wind was going to blow him over. And then he packed on the salmon like you wouldn't believe. So everybody was like, give it. And Otis, I think, is like a 3 or 4 time champion. So, you know, he's a goat. And in addition to being a bear. But going back to Grazer,
he's the goat of bears. He's the goat of bears. Confusing.
Grazer, one more time. She's the fiercest mama bear out there.
Okay.
She's got these two girls right now, the Grazerettes, is what they call them.
Okay. Come on.
Yeah. Josh loving this. And, I mean, last year they were just the bullies at the falls. I mean, when the Grazerettes were coming down, it's like everybody parted because Grazer's a big girl herself. Her cubs were both 2 years old, and 2 years is like usually the max. I mean, that's, you know, most moms, you know, some moms only keep their cubs for 1 year, and then some will kick them out after year two and everything.
Kick them out. Go get a job.
Exactly.
It's like Andy Reid offense.
And almost no mama bear keeps her cubs 3 years. Well, she just came out of hibernation with the cubs.
Wow.
And they're still hanging out. So it's like, are they going to stay the season with her? I mean, we'll see.
Are we going to get to witness the separation at some point?
Exactly. I mean, they have seen the separation on the cams before. You know,
or is she building a dynasty?
Because when that happens, usually it's because, you know, when it gets separated, it's like mom's like, okay, it's time for you to go.
Right.
And then she'll like chase him and bite him and attack him and everything. I mean, not like fiercely, but right, you know.
Have you seen rent prices on caves? Lots of children are moving home.
Exactly. I mean, maybe that's why. And this is
Do they Airbnb it out for other
this is
bears?
Another.
It's just Air Bear and Bear.
Air Bear and Bear just to go and...
It's Airbnb
bear,
and B.
Bear B&B.
Ooh, Bear B&B is right there.
There you go. Bear B&B.
Bear B&B.
We got Bear.
This is another great storyline to watch because last year, there's two bears, 909 and 910. They are sisters. And normally family units don't stick together. I mean, you know, everything. I mean, they don't. I mean, you're a bear, and even if you were a cub, you know, you had, you know, sister or anything like that, and like the Grazerettes.
It is an epidemic of
usually,
this country.
You just go your own separate way. You get your own place. You get your own hive, you know, hibernation. You know, you're not
allowed to then stay there with the others if you're a...
Right. Usually that's what the parents do. The mama does. And so she'll like chase them off, and the cubs will sometimes go to a different part of the park, you know, and set up their own territory so they're away from mom and everything. Well, 909 and 910 still fish the falls and everything. And I think it was 909 had a 1-year-old last year. 910 had a fresh cub. And about midway through the season, you know, they kind of met up and everything. And they started hanging out together.
Whoa.
And then they started babysitting each other's cubs.
No way.
So, like, one would go fish, and one would watch both of the cubs, and they would switch off and everything. And if some other bears came along and started giving them some business and saying, hey, we want your fish. Oh, and there's fish theft all the time.
It's just called fishing, but it's P-H-I-S.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, last year they started hanging out together as a family. That never happens. The researchers have never seen it before. So they're fascinated in it. And once again, came out of hibernation this year, still hanging out together.
Wow.
So, see.
Didn't let it off season
change. Storylines for this. I mean, forget the Michael Jordan documentary.
Yeah.
I mean, this is.
It's fascinating is what it is.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
nature is really fascinating. And I did not know that they would just chase their cubs away. Like, that seems really extreme and mean.
Heartbreaking stuff.
Like what?
You know, well, last year, one of the bigger bears, I'm trying to remember which one it was. It was 856. 856 is kind of a bully. But he's like an alpha. He's like one of the biggest bears, and he kind of pushes himself around. 39, bear 39.
Is a beta bear?
She had four cubs. Mm. And, you know, taking care of four cubs is crazy. But on top of that, 39, she's a falls fisher. That's where she does her best work.
Sounds like 39 should use some protection.
Well, it was all one, you know.
One litter.
One litter. Yeah, so, you know. But she fishes the falls. I mean, all the bears fish different places, and they fish where they're comfortable. So she's going to go fish where she's comfortable. So she was fishing the falls. Well, 856 didn't really like that, and so he chased her, and don't really know, but after that, she only had three cubs.
No.
Yeah. And so, you know, on the cams, you could see her, you know, she was, you know, crying out, looking for the third cub, because she took the other cubs and hid them and protected them and everything.
Then ganged up on 856?
No.
Some community there.
But, no, there's other, I mean, oh, there's plenty of great stories. I mean, one of the up-and-coming bears.
Yeah, right,
who's expected to be one of, and I know you want to talk about bears for the entire hour.
We did months in the draft. This is basically that.
I'm trying to remember. I think it's 5-something or other. Maybe 5'10", 5'02". I can't remember. He was abandoned by his mom. And when he was like, I can't remember if he was a cub or a yearling. But it was pretty early. But he was also sick. He had like an injured leg, and he couldn't keep up with mom and everything like that. And I think she may have had another cub too. So she did the nature thing. She takes care of the healthy cub,
and the
unhealthy cub is just like, we'll just leave you go do your thing. Well, Holly, who had a cub at the time, and Holly is like, she's a beautiful bear. She's like a blonde bear, stands out strikingly against all the other brown bears because she's just platinum blonde.
Champion in 2019.
The soccer mom?
Exactly. A 2019 fat bear champion. I mean, she can pack on the salmon too. She adopted that cub that was hurt.
Traded a third round pick to the Giants.
Exactly. And so then she took care of that cub along with her cub. And now that cub that she adopted, I mean, like I said, I think that cub's like maybe 5 or 6 years old. I mean, and they think that, hey, when he's a full-grown adult, you know, like 8 to 10, he's going to be one of the, you know, bigger bears on Brooks Falls and might be dominant bear.
So it's like an investment then.
Yeah. Exactly.
Holly's a great scout, a great bear scout.
Oh, yeah, she's a
Dominican,
great...
It's a Dominican signing as a young 16-year-old that will eventually grow
recruiter,
into Ellie Dela Cruz.
Great coaching. I mean, she's probably the Andy Reid of bears.
Packing on the salmon.
And can pack on the salmon, too. I bet Andy Reid has never pushed away a salmon.
Text line comes in and says, what the hell is going on? Another text says, I absolutely hate myself for thoroughly enjoying this content right now.
Nothing to be ashamed of here.
Nancy said, it was 93 because 39 had two cubs, but that has four cubs.
93, 39.
But it was 39 that we lost.
It's confusing. Yeah. I just love that of all the texts that have come in, those were back-to-back. it's just perfect.
Yeah. Think about how I felt when all this happened during the pandemic, you know, because this is what we got involved with during the pandemic. What else are you going to watch? Marbles or bears?
Yeah.
My personal text line says, I'm loving the bear stories. Does chasing and biting work for human children over 21 still living at home? I haven't tried that yet.
Worth a shot. Just, you know, the other thing is don't give any to your salmon.
Texas.
Make them go get their own salmon.
Texas, can we have fat bears on Reddit?
Wow. This is what we need. All right.
Texas, can you talk about this during the Royals segment instead?
Yes.
Another text says, are you guys going to actually discuss the Chiefs today? Well, we're talking about the Chiefs in a way. We're discussing the Bears.
Bears
they face off against the Bears this year at home. So, you know.
My game should have been in Germany.
We're doing those
international
Bears. That's right. Visiting with Matt Derrick.
Matt Derrick.
Chiefs Digest. Bear Digest. joining us to talk about all things NFC North and the Chiefs, discussing the Bears, discussing also the National League Central and the Cubs. So
there you go.
Everything Chicago
UCLA
is what we're talking about.
Can Bears, we do that too?
Wait a minute. Chicago's teams are the Bears and the Cubs. Did they do that on purpose? Yeah, I guess I'm stupid to not know that they probably did that on purpose.
Wait.
Ooh, do Bears wear white socks?
I always like it that whenever you're like watching a movie or reading a book that's not licensed, and it's like a sports book, and the Chicago team is always the Bruins, too. So
are the Bears at this place protected by Black Hawks?
Wait till you find out about the Jets, Mets, and Nets.
No, don't care.
Just glad you said Black Hawks correctly.
Me too.
Yeah. It's Matt Derrick, Chiefs Digest. So let's talk about the Chiefs.
Yes.
We should probably take a break.
No. We're just getting started here.
Exactly.
We're getting rolling here. This is Fat Chiefs Week going on. So the Chiefs have OTAs
and
next week is the mandatory
mini camp. Next week is the mandatory
mini camp. Mandatory mini camp with OTAs going on this week and all of those things. Let's play. You know what? Let's have some fun with Blaine Gabbert. Blaine Gabbert was asked, what does Bear 938 and Bear 742 have in common as they, you know, sort of
Well, 747 going to be Patrick Mahomes and...
Yeah, and whatever the other one
32 chunk could be Tom Brady.
Tom Brady. Blaine Gabbert weighing in on what he sees and the commonalities between those two great quarterbacks.
They're maniacal perfectionists. That's... And I mean that in the most endearing way possible. The two best, in my opinion, to ever play the game. To see the similarities, kind of how they operate in the meeting room, on the practice field. Now they're completely different players, as we all know, but the way they approach the game on and off the football field is the exact same way, and you can see why they both have had such sustained success early on and then throughout their careers.
How do you see that in Pat?
Just his attention to detail. He's a master of the system. He's been in it now, I think, going on 7 years. He still approaches it like it's day one, still taking notes the same way as he did as a rookie, as all quarterbacks do. You need to kind of refresh every single year, and there's always something that he wants to work on, always something to improve on, always something to get better at.
Do you prefer maniacal perfectionist or competitive prick?
I think both are accurate.
I mean, I can't wait for the next description for somebody about Patrick Mahomes that we've heard competitive prick and maniacal perfectionist. Those are great descriptions.
Great answer.
Of who he if you didn't know anything about Patrick Mahomes and somebody said he's a competitive prick and a maniacal perfectionist, like, you'd have a pretty decent idea of what he may be able to accomplish on the field if you said he's gifted with immense talent. Like, every gift of what a quarterback could want, and he's got that which you can't teach and is not something that you can sort of measure by arm strength or accuracy or ability to escape the pocket.
Yeah, I mean, as I heard him say it and everything, I was like, okay, Blaine gets it clearly.
Yeah,
he's figured out Mahomes already. He knows it. But I thought it was a perfect description. I mean, it absolutely is. And I mean, we've seen it with Brady all these years. But I mean, Mahomes is exactly the same way. And we'll see what somebody else comes up with next as the description for Mahomes. But I thought it was just dead on perfect. And you're right. I mean, it does. If you don't know anything about Patrick Mahomes, those two phrases tell you pretty much everything you need to know.
It's the Chiefs continue to dip into the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that played with Tom Brady, Justin Watson last year. Ooh, you played with Tom Brady. You played with Patrick Mahomes. What are the similarities and the things you see? Donovan Smith. Hey, you played with Tom Brady. You played with Patrick Mahomes. What do you see? Like, what do you see? Have you seen some of those throws in practice of the Patrick Mahomes and then, you know, Brady and, you know, different systems? And now Blaine Gabbert, you've played with Tom Brady. You've been around Patrick Mahomes. What's it like? Like, we've had a number of different people we can ask about the comparisons between Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. All of them have weighed in, and it's not like, well, you're going to hear somebody have a disparaging remark about Brady or about Patrick Mahomes. But it is fascinating that it's been back-to-back seasons and three different players on the offensive side that have played with Tom Brady to have that comparison of this guy who is viewed as the GOAT versus this guy who you're now playing with that has that is maybe the most talented player to ever play the position that has the start to his young career that has just been otherworldly and could ultimately be the greatest of all time in decorated success while also ability. Hey, what do you think of these two that do it differently?
Yeah.
And that's what's fascinating is that they do it differently, but apparently like the approach and the way of going about preparing is not necessarily different. It's just when they get on the field, they accomplish and they execute in different ways to score points.
And that's why, I mean, I'm fascinated in the opportunity that Blaine Gabbert has here because, one, how many quarterbacks are going to get the opportunity to play with both these guys? I mean, right now, I guess one has done
it.
But he's also getting them at, you know, the right times. I mean, yeah, it was the end of the kind of end of the road for Tom Brady, but maybe that's the best time to get Tom Brady. And now he's coming to Patrick when Patrick is up and running. And for anybody else who comes in, I mean, offensively, yeah, I mean, you can talk about it being you know, a lineman or a receiver or a running back or somebody else. Being in that quarterback room is something else. And that's why, to me, it's just such a unique perspective because being able to be in the room when those guys, when they're breaking down film and the thought process, I mean, and everything, the perspectives that Blaine's going to have on both these guys after, you know, how many ever years he's in Kansas City, it's going to be a neat perspective that nobody else is going to be able to share.
We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue hanging out with Matt Derrick. We'll get into more about the Chicago Bears and also the Kansas City Chiefs. Frank Clark is a Bronco. We'll talk about some other things on the defense. Justin Reed had an interesting comment about when he became comfortable in the defense last year, which was pretty fascinating looking back at that and sort of having the full picture now. We'll talk about those things with Matt Derrick. And also, we discussed yesterday about Donovan Smith and joining the Chiefs and from the offensive line and the interior that he played with last year at left guard and now what it could be this year. And we see Pro Football Focus's rankings of the center position and the guard position that's out and really looking at the best interior offensive line units based on some of those rankings. We'll do that and get into that conversation with Matt Derrick as well. More Zone coming up next. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're hanging out with Matt Derrick coming up at noon. We'll talk with Ali Trost Martin. Some sporting, some current, some messy conversation, which is also what we had at the first part of this conversation with Matt Derrick, depending on which way you view it. Frank Clark, the tenure is over with the Kansas City Chiefs, and he is heading west to play with the Denver Broncos. How much did you think there was a chance of them bringing Frank Clark back? And then your reaction to the news yesterday that he is signing with the Denver Broncos 1 year, $5.5 million with a chance to make $7.5 million with incentives.
Yeah, I mean, I thought all along and said all along. I mean, I thought there was a decent chance, especially the longer that it went on, because you would normally think that the longer you go into free agency, the price typically comes down. And, I mean, Chiefs and Brett, I mean, Brett said from the very beginning, I mean, wasn't necessarily the end. I mean, Chiefs, that was kind of all along, was like, hey, yeah, we'd consider bringing back Frank Clark at some point. Clearly, his teammates wanted him back because there was a little bit of a semi-organized campaign to try and get Frank back in KC. So a little surprised by that. The other part that just surprised me is I just didn't think he would get that much.
That's the biggest surprise.
Don't begrudge him at all, because if you're able to get 5.5 guaranteed and a reasonable chance to make 6.5 and maybe 7.5, that's a great deal for Frank Clark. So you can't turn that down. I mean, and that was not going to be the deal in Kansas City. I mean, the Chiefs, if they wanted to bring back Frank Clark, I mean, if they wanted to bring him back at that money, I mean, they could have already. I mean, that would have been a done deal anyway. So I think it's a pretty good indication that the price point at which the Chiefs were comfortable bringing back Frank was not that price point.
And I wonder if that's why Chris Jones stopped tweeting about it. Because, again, I've joked a couple of times that, you know, Chris Jones said, I'm going to tweet every day until he's back, and that lasted 4 days. It might have been to where you start to get an idea, if you're Frank Clark, of, look, this is what the Chiefs are offering me. This is what my agent's saying, that, you know, already discussions with other teams of what I can get. It ain't going to work, Chris. I mean, I appreciate it, but, you know, it's...
And no offense to Chris, but There's a reason why.
Yeah, that's right.
The Chiefs couldn't even make an offer to Frank Clark.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they don't have any cap space, and the reason they don't have any cap space is that your extension's not done yet.
Yeah, and they don't have any cap space, even though it says like they've got $1 million of cap space, but they have not signed Rashee Rice yet. He's the only rookie that is yet to sign with the Chiefs. They've signed every other draft pick but Rice, which, as a quick aside, is that a concern, a worry? Like, years passed before the rookie wage scale or whatever, then it would have been, okay, what's going on? There's not much you can negotiate except for, like, when you get your cash, how much is up front, what parts of the contract are guaranteed. He's still showing up to everything. It's not a holdout.
The only other thing you really can get in there sometimes are just offsets as far as, you know, what you're going to sacrifice if you'll get cut later and what the team can kind of recoup back. So, yeah, I mean, these don't typically go on that long. Like you said, sometimes it's just a matter of when the money gets there and everything. Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs are close enough on the cap right now that if this deal were structured in a way, they might not be able to get it under.
That's the other thing, too, that I wonder, like, how accurate are some of the numbers? And if they're that accurate, like, his cap hit is going to be higher than what they have remaining, according to, like, what the expected cap hit would be versus what the, I would still call it Spotrac and over the cap, unofficial of what their specific number is on June 9th at 11:30.
Yeah, and you know, and remember, too, I mean, well, one, I think the, and I haven't looked at the NFLPA number for a couple of days. I know it was at 1.2, and I don't think anything else has hit since then. I know Albert Breer had off another list that supposedly comes from the NFL that had him even lower than that, like maybe 300, some odd thousand and change. But then remember, I mean, you know, this time of year, it's only the top 51 contracts. So Rashee Rice is going to replace
That's a good point.
Just the minimum salary $51 million contract. So you're not increasing it a full, you know, if his cap hit is going to be $750, it's not the whole $750 that
right.
hits.
Right. So you would increase it by like $400,000?
Yeah. Which so then they would have the one cap space, they might not have enough room.
Right. And according to like over the cap and Spotrac, they would have enough room. That's a good point. Yeah. So you're replacing the top 51 there. Also, as I just quickly glance through, there are no second rounders signed yet in front of Rashee Rice.
And that's another factor.
So
the
first rounders have almost all been signed except like the top 10.
And that's weird. I mean, I haven't heard the holdup about what it is, but that
the
is
second rounders
the
are just
deal.
Like nothing. Across the board, there's a few that have signed, but like Mingo and Reed have not signed their. Those are the two wide receivers in front of Rice.
Mm.
They haven't signed their deal yet.
Yeah, that's weird.
And behind Rice, a lot of contracts have been done. So it is kind of odd. Like I don't know if there's a waiting by his agent and maybe even the Chiefs of like, hey, once these guys start to fill in, because FAU was a little bit later on with first round picks. Those first round picks were filling in ahead of FAU before his contract was done. And now it's just really odd to see all of the different blanks next to the second round picks in what their contracts were that they signed and agreed to. So.
Second round contracts are probably to a degree the trickiest because, I mean, first round picks really end up getting slotted. So once they start falling in, it's pretty easy. And then once you get really the third and fourth round, I mean, there's almost no negotiation. I mean, it's just you almost take it or leave it. I mean, that's what it is because there's a slot of them out that you're going to pay. The teams can only pay so much anyway, so you kind of take what you get. Second round is a little bit more interesting negotiation. So
there are three second round picks that have signed their contract.
That's really weird.
Derek Hall with Seattle, defensive end from Auburn. Matthew Bergeron, tackle from Syracuse with the Falcons. And B.J. Ojulari of LSU with the Arizona Cardinals. That's three. And you're talking about Rashee Rice was pick 23 of the second round. So, you know, and only three of those guys in front of them. The top five draft picks have not signed a contract yet. But pick 23 to 31 have all agreed. And again, once those started filling in, then FAU. So it's an interesting point of like, you know, what they have left on their salary cap. And then also nobody signed in the second round. It's just, it's kind of odd.
The public salary cap report on the NFLPA's website here has the Chiefs at 1.2 inch change, second least in football. And like some of the other sites have had even less than that, but that's the NFLPA one that I just found.
Yeah. So if they add like, you know, $400,000 to the cap, then you're talking about still having a surplus of $800,000, according to that, if they get this contract signed. But, yeah, it is kind of weird that all of those and only three of the second rounders in front of Rashee Rice. Because behind Rashee Rice is Tyreek Stevenson, hasn't signed yet, but then pick 57 through 63 have all signed their contracts. So, and, in fact, 57 through 75 have all signed their contracts. So, again, but it's not the same that it used to be in 2010 before the rookie wage scale came in, because then it would be, what's going on? Why has he not signed yet? And is there going to be an issue with this guy who's going to be relied upon to come in and play? And all they've got every other draft pick signed, but this guy, it would be a much bigger conversation than it is sort of a sidebar, sort of a note. That
Gosh, those used to be such fun when the GM and the agent would start dropping F-bombs at each other.
Yeah, where's the John Tate? Where's Todd Lebo showing up with just a phone in the background and going live? I mean, come on. Where's that at? What's the legacy of Frank Clark in this town?
I mean, I think he's going to be remembered fairly fondly. I mean, it does seem like there's some division. I mean, in fact, and I think certainly going to Denver will probably affect it a little bit, because I've seen it all across the board. I mean, the response that I've heard from fans, I mean, some's like, hey, good for Frank, great for him, great deal. Someone's like, not the Broncos, boo. But to me, I mean, I think a fair assessment of Frank Clark is that you signed him to get you over the hump, to get you a Super Bowl. And he's certainly, you don't win 54 without him. Do you win 57 without him? Maybe. But it's on his resume. Mm-hmm. So you signed Frank Clark to win a Super Bowl. You won two. So I don't know how you can't put that down any other as a very, very unqualified success. I mean, there's no asterisk next to it to me. I mean, that's a good deal. You got two Super Bowls out of it.
I think it's a it's somewhat of a I guess in a way complicated legacy for Frank Clark.
It is.
He's got the two Super Bowls. He's playoff Frank. You know, Clark the Shark, which will always be remembered fondly, but he was also a guy during the regular season, and the money he was making was typically defensively the first person people complained about. Get rid of Frank Clark. You got to let him. Why is he still on this team? Get him out. Why is he playing? Why is he starting? He's making way too much money. This guy's cap hit is $26 million in 2021. Like, this guy is a cap hit of that much for the production you're getting. What a mistake. Did they make a mistake with that contract, with that trade? Yeah, they got a Super Bowl, but they're paying for it now with this deal. And yet, the further removed, it's two Super Bowls, playoff Frank Clark, because he started getting sacks again in the playoffs this last year. Yeah. That, you know, I compared it a little bit to Alex Smith, that in the time and the moment, there were complaints and frustrations with Alex Smith. And then since he's been gone, and you hear stories of mentoring Patrick Mahomes, being an ultimate professional, great dude, and you've got a couple Super Bowls with Patrick Mahomes and this success, you think of Alex Smith a little more fondly as stabilizing the quarterback position in a town that from Trent Green to Alex Smith was just a, who in the heck is going to be there that can do anything besides embarrass yourself out there on the field? He did that and then handed the baton over to Patrick Mahomes. So Alex Smith, as time passes, is viewed much more fondly than his time when he was currently on the Chiefs.
And I think, I mean, hey, I make it pretty clear. I think Brett Veach has done a great job as the general manager. I think he's incredibly underrated. I think when he signed Frank Clark, he made, I would quibble with one mistake that I think he made. And I think that was probably a young GM making the mistake, which is that I think he oversold it. Because, I mean, my takeaway from the Frank Clark press conference when they signed him was Brett Veach coming in there and saying, we view this guy as an elite pass rusher. He is one of the best pass rushers in the league. Was Frank Clark ever one of the best pass rushers in the league? No, I don't think that he was. I mean, he was good, but was he ever one of the top three or top five pass rushers? I don't think I can make that case. Now, was playoff Frank one of the best big game pass rushers? Yeah, and if that's what Brett had said, then, you know, I think you could have parsed the statement a little bit more. But had he just said, look, you know, we're bringing in this guy, and we think he's really good, but more importantly, we think he's going to bring an attitude to this team, he's going to bring an edge, he's going to show up in big games, that is so much different than saying he's an elite pass rusher. And had he you know, described Frank differently, I think fans would have had a different expectation. Because I feel like all along, fans, especially with the money he was given and the way that the Chiefs built him up with that signing, that fans expected him to come in and give you 15 sacks every year and be one of the top three, five guys in the league.
Because he had 13 sacks when they traded for him, and he never got to double digits with the Chiefs.
No. I mean, that's why I say, I mean, I don't think you can say he was an elite pass rusher, but was he elite in the postseason? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's amazing. 58 games with the Chiefs, and he had, you know, 23 and a half sacks. 12 games in the playoffs, and he had almost 11 sacks.
Was
it's just ridiculous.
Was he an elite teammate when healthy? Yeah, he was. I mean,
and you know what? And you see him, you know, working with Karlaftis. I mean, there's a little Alex Smith there at the end of his tenure with the Chiefs.
I don't doubt about that. He was a great influence to have around this team.
I remember Frank Clark fondly, and I remember him fondly because there are two Super Bowls, and man, put a microphone in front of Frank Clark, and I loved it because he brought I almost said the word.
Whoa!
He brought an FU to this team. Where, you know, jumping off sides last year, all that, I told him it was going to be changed when I got here. And then James Palmer, like, people said you couldn't cash the check that you're... Who? People say, they must not know who I am when I got that ring on my finger. And then, Burrowhead, take your ass back to Cincinnati. Like, that Frank Clark will be remembered fondly.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was an F you, I'm here, what's gone on in the past in Kansas City defensively ain't happening now. We're going to go and bully some people around. That's what I remember, Frank Clark. That was a sort of attitude change, too, from a group of guys that weren't showing up for things, that were being paid a lot of money, but didn't really have that leadership and didn't really, you know, feel like they wanted to be there, and the whole getting along with all that stuff and Bob Sutton and everything, to then Spagnuolo and then Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu coming in and sort of having this, no, we're going to be some dogs out here.
And I was thinking about this when you were talking about her during the first hour. Frank Clark, Alex Smith, Ring of Honor, Hall of Fame.
It's interesting.
I think Frank Clark absolutely will be. I think all of that about two Super Bowl rings, and the contract will be the first thing forgotten about his legacy. The next thing that will be forgotten will be that weren't there some stretches in the regular season where he just either wasn't available, wasn't there very much? But Clark the Shark! Playoff Frank, like that's a Ring of Honor player, and I think a reasonable
too.
One too. I don't think it's, you know, every I don't want to throw barbs at anybody on accident, but like not everyone who wins even well will everyone who wins two rings with the Chiefs be around there? It'll be close. I don't know that James Winchester is ever going to get a statue. He'll always be a multi-time.
What would his statue be?
I think that's the one I want to see. That right there. Imagine that. We need some long snapping.
Inappropriate step.
People wouldn't have your photo taken.
People would be taking some very awful pictures.
That would need to probably be up on a pedestal, maybe with some fencing around it. Yeah,
yes,
for sure.
I agree.
But Frank Clark would not be what a teammate addition. His would be worthy, I think. And Alex Smith, too. It's a different conversation.
And his induction ceremony would be fantastic. So,
oh, yeah.
I would sign up
Give him. They never want to give him the bleeping microphone. So, please then, at least.
We had to get the microphone from people that were, you know, with ESPN and NFL Network talking to him on the field. Hey, where's Frank Clark? Oh, there's Frank Clark. Let's go get Frank Clark. Let's go talk with Frank Clark. But, yeah, he's a Denver Bronco. It does suck that he's a Bronco.
But
what if he's really bad, though?
I was going to say, on the other side, it's not going to matter because the Broncos aren't going to be good. So.
Yeah, that's probably
it's not going to be like Neil Smith coming in here and, you know, the Broncos winning Super Bowls and that kind of thing.
What if he just, like, what if through the entirety of Chiefs Broncos, he just gives Juwan Taylor a big hug or just gives Donovan Smith a big hug? And they just kind of stand there, maybe sway a little bit. Double agent. Build that legacy, Frank.
Yeah, that's great.
Double agent.
It was weird seeing Jamaal Charles in a Denver Broncos uniform. It was really weird seeing Derek Johnson in a non-Chiefs uniform. And Donnie Edwards bothered me because he finally started making Pro Bowls, even though he was worthy of Pro Bowls when he left KC. I don't know that this one will bother me as much. It's weird.
Yeah,
Alex Smith didn't bother me with what, but you're talking about like...
Neil Smith was the one that hurt the most, but...
You're absolutely right about that. That is the one that really hurt. Albert Lewis hurt. Neil Smith
Hurt. Lewis did hurt.
Neil Smith, that one hurt because then you watch Neil Smith go and win a couple Super Bowls. And it's like, I'm happy for him, but I'm also pissed at the same time, you know, watching him in that uniform.
Michael Burton's going to hurt.
Is he?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Deeply.
What if you change Michael Burton and now you keep Justin Ross? Won't hurt as much anymore.
Boy, if you ever saw Justin Ross in another uniform, that would really hurt.
I'll be damned if I see him in a Broncos, Chargers, or Raiders uniform, or a Bengals uniform. Oh, God.
What's his statue going to look like?
You know what? Frank Clark to the Bengals would have bothered me. That would have bothered me. Anybody? Broncos?
That's fair. That's
Broncos, it's like, you know, they're fine. What was your line, Drake, about Frank Clark and the Broncos?
We won't ever have to worry about seeing playoff Frank again.
That's probably fair.
I appreciate that line. Speaking of lines, we'll talk about the Chiefs next.
All right, hanging out with Matt Derrick, Chiefs Digest. So I went and looked at the center rankings and the guard rankings at Pro Football Focus heading into the season. Creed Humphrey's number one.
Yes.
In the center rankings.
Justifiably.
Yep. Joe Tooney, number five of all guards. And Trey Smith,
too low,
number 13. So
probably also too low. But
two of their guards are top 15. I mean, you're talking about 64 starting guards.
Exactly.
In the NFL. And 32 starting centers. So do the math there. 96 players. Chiefs have number one, number five, and number 13. The only other team that comes close, and it's very close, is Cleveland has the number seven center, the number three and number 10 guard. So that adds up to 20. The Chiefs adds up to 19. That's the closest. So by the PFF rankings preseason going into the season, the Chiefs have the very best interior offensive line, better than the Eagles, because Landon Dickerson is behind Trey Smith and Tooney, and Jason Kelce is just behind Creed. He might be number two, but he's still behind Creed. And then the two guards for the Chiefs rank ahead, so they're ahead of the Eagles, and
Chiefs
the Browns are close.
Is lower too.
Yes, and the Browns are close, but by those metrics specifically, Chiefs have the best interior offensive line in the NFL.
I can't argue with that. And I mean, honestly, I mean, when you think about Nick Allegretti is the next man up in there, and they've got some other guys too. I think they're deep mm-hmm. there as well. So I think Allegretti it surprised me. I thought he would get a starting job somewhere around the league. Maybe needs one more year to show it, because he hasn't got maybe needs somebody to get hurt, but you don't want that to get him some playing time. But he's starting caliber. So
yeah, Denerick Prince, is he starting caliber?
Starting caliber
is Denerick. That was just a random transition. Is Denerick Prince the running back version of Justin Ross this year? Now,
can we get some middle ground in between those two?
No,
I mean
no.
Honestly, I would say no, because I think Justin Ross is trailing Denerick Prince.
Thank you.
Right,
that's
now,
the right take. I mean,
there it is.
I mean, they've all been anointed Denerick Prince as the kick returner, and completely get it, because he looks the part. I mean, whether he is the second coming of Nile Davis or not, and some people with the Chiefs will say that's actually maybe a somewhat of an insult to Denerick Prince, because Nile Davis had zero hands, couldn't catch a football, and Denerick Prince has caught literally everything that has gone his way during these OTAs. So, I mean, that's a heck of a find. I mean, if Denerick Prince is everything that the Chiefs think that he is right now, and you could have a backfield of two guys that you found in the seventh round and an undrafted free agent, that, I mean, that's pretty solid scouting right there.
Yeah, the talk last year at this time was Pacheco, and that was a draft pick. It was a seventh rounder. But there was also Jerrion Ealy, who was an undrafted free agent that people were really liking from Ole Miss. Now, he's on the practice squad, right?
Yep, he's on the roster,
and he was more or less a receiver last year, and now he's a running back again.
Yeah, so they moved him wide receiver, then back to running back. But his star sort of has gone in the background of the up-and-coming Prince.
Yeah, and that's what's really surprising is that, you know, Ealy, with all of his speed and agility that he's in that category, hasn't really been in the mix as a return guy. So, I mean, that limits his value a little bit too. But, I mean, the return ability is what is going to put Prince ahead. I mean, that's going to get him his roster spot.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, unless the Chiefs make any moves, I mean, clearly you're going to have Pacheco, Clyde, going to have Jerick McKinnon. Prince will be your fourth guy. You're not going to have a fullback. I mean, maybe that's just your backfield as it is. But also, I mean, we're assuming that Isaiah Pacheco is going to be ready by week one, and I think he probably will. But you know, it's, I think it's questionable about, you know, whether or not Pacheco is ready to go first week of training camp. I mean, you know, they may ease him back in a little bit. There may be a few of those guys that they do. And, hey, they're going to have 6.5 months of training camp this year because of that Thursday night start. So they're going to have a lot of time to work guys in. But, I mean, we'll see. But, you know, could that mean maybe a little bit more playing time for Prince opportunities early? Or is that why you make sure you get McKinnon back so you can give Pacheco a little bit of time to ease in? I don't know, but Prince making the team. Yeah.
It's interesting. As much as I love Pacheco and what he did a year ago for the Chiefs running game, it doesn't really concern me as much if it's like, he'll be eased in slowly. He may not be fully 100% for week number one against the Lions, because even though we're talking about Edwards-Helaire, who's been a disappointment as a first-rounder, people know I love Jerick McKinnon. I feel okay with the backfield and the running back room, yeah, and what they have, that if Pacheco isn't 100%, that it's not going to go from Isaiah Pacheco to then, let's say, Nile Davis as the running back, that every time he touches the ball, is he going to turn it over? He also can't catch the ball. Like, he's a one-dimensional guy that's going to get the ball and run, and hopefully when he gets tackled, he doesn't fumble. I like the backfield for the Chiefs and the makeup, yeah, of it, and even, you know, and when you include a guy like Denarik Prince that, you know, can go out and catch the football, and those four guys, I mean, they're going to keep four. So I would guess that, you know, everybody else is on the outside looking in, that if Brett Veach is going and talking to the media about what he's seeing from Denarik Prince.
And the crazy thing is that, I mean, even though they're somewhat comparable size and, you know, I think their styles have been compared to each other, I don't see the Pacheco and Prince being as nearly identical as some other people do. I mean, I do think they are a good complement. I mean, at this point, I think there's reason to believe that Prince is more polished as a pass catcher than Pacheco is. I think Prince looks to me, and this is just OTAs where they don't run the ball that much, but Prince looks more comfortable outside and Pacheco looks more comfortable inside. I mean, that to me, I think is a positive pairing.
That's interesting.
I'm really excited.
I do also wonder, like, we can't tell in OTAs and stuff like that, but Denarik Prince and his learning curve of being able to protect Patrick Mahomes.
That would be a big question.
Because if he's in there for the passing game, yeah, that's the beautiful part about McKinnon, is that McKinnon, you start off with the fact that he's such a really good pass protector, and then you also throw in the fact that, oh, by the way, he's a phenomenal receiver out of the backfield and is a playmaker from that standpoint. You get the whole package with him. You don't get a one or the other, where Darrell Williams was a safety, you know, was a security blanket for the Chiefs in protecting Mahomes. But with the ball in his hands, he wasn't Jerick McKinnon out of the backfield as a receiver. He was good. He caught, yeah, everything. But he wasn't like, put the ball in McKinnon's hands, and now he can go the distance with it and do some crazy things. It's that really awesome package. Do they have that maybe in, you know, Denarik Prince, if he can pass protect, if they feel like with the ball in his hands and also his ability to catch the football? And I do think Pacheco is more, maybe not underrated, because I think he's viewed as a good pass catcher, but not like, you know, Christian McCaffrey or anything, but maybe underutilized in what he could be, yeah, as a receiver out of the backfield. You know, it's not like he's lacking that and they just have to bring somebody else in because Pacheco's not going to catch the ball. Or, yeah, anything like that.
And, you know, and the crazy thing is that, I mean, this time of year, I mean, because Pacheco and McKinnon have not been at OTAs and been out, Clyde's getting majority of the work. So it's not like Clyde is completely out of the backfield.
Good for him. Absolutely. Good for him. And other guys get an opportunity.
And other guys get
like
good touches,
Prince,
too.
What was Brett Veach talking about when he was loving up Denarik Prince?
I think we pretty much touched on it. I mean, just as far as the hands go, the speed. You know, those are the two things. I mean, the fact that his hands have been much more impressive than they were anticipating.
Matt Derrick from Chiefs Digest, our guest, and we talk some Kansas City Chiefs, and we talk some running back and some Bears.
There you go.
Fat Bear.
Eat that salmon.
Season.
It's too bad that this is the year without a fullback. Like, an FB now is just a Fat Bear. We could have had Bear.
I mean, we need to get this going, because last year I did send Josh the gif of the mama bear peeing on the cub's head.
I remember this.
That was hysterical.
I remember this because we've got great taste.
You get bit by a jellyfish or stung by a jellyfish?
The cub was just sitting there behind mom, and mom had to go to the bathroom, and the cub was just sitting there very innocent looking, and all of a sudden gets peed on the head, and it was hysterical.
You got to know your surroundings. Head on a swivel, bear. These are important rookie sort of lessons.
Now the Bears sting and the jellyfish bite. It's
what my Twitter account will be for the next 6 weeks before training camp.
You know what?
And actually, it's only a month.
Looking for more content.
5 weeks.
Follow Matt Derrick.
You can eat a lot of salmon in 5 weeks.
And Bears.
And salmon.
Thank you, Matt. You're the man. Allie Trost Martin next.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson on Sports Radio 810 WHB.